And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Top story to me that is of interest this morning is the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. signing. And they had said they weren't going to talk in season. They lied. They did talk in season. They get the deal done, 14 years, $500 million. We knew once that the reports came out that Vlad turned down $500 million that both the Mets and the Yankees would be long shots at that point. Yep. Initially going in, I'm thinking, oh, man, he's going to hit free agency, not happy in Toronto. They couldn't come to an agreement. And I was thinking between $400 and $500 million. He ends up getting $500 million for the Blue Jays, who he's more valuable to than anybody else. I think a good deal for him, but what does this mean now for the Mets, and more specifically, Pete Alonso moving forward?
Well, I think it means possibly some good stuff for Pete. It won't mean anything if Pete doesn't have a good season. Like, I know he's off to a good start. It's great to see. Pete's got to continue to bang and continue to do damage. Now, I was thinking about the same thing. So, I never thought the Yanks would be a serious player for Vlad Guerrero. That's more Tucker, when we'll get to that in a little bit. I never thought the Mets would have the appetite just because of the bigger, Lindor, of course, Soto now as well. I gave the Mets more of a chance to maybe make a run of Vladdy than the Yankees, but I didn't think they would. So
people thought the Red Sox maybe, if not the New York teams, remember the Red Sox would be one of those teams. Obviously, that's off as well.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, somebody had to take Toronto's money. Yeah, I don't think he was going to get a better deal elsewhere. I don't think it's going to age very well. I don't think that, the 14, forget about the 500, 14 years. What is Vlad Guerrero going to look like in 14 years? But specific to Pete, the question, I don't think the question is, would the Mets be open to renegotiating at some point during the season? I think that they might be amenable to it. I think the question is, would Pete and Boris be open to it?
I don't know why either side would. What do you think would be the benefit for the Mets? Why at this point? See, the Mets have clearly operated one way. Let the market dictate what you are worth. The market said Pete Alonso was not worth $30 million a year, but the Mets gave him the $30 million a year to bring him back. He's more just like Vlad to the Blue Jays. Pete's more valuable to the Mets. Now, though, with Vlad off the board, I would think Pete has a little more leverage in that the Mets were going to pivot to try to go after Vladimir Guerrero Jr., if not Pete Alonso. I'm talking about for 1 year, for this year. But now that's not even a possibility any longer. So who are the Mets going to go get to play first base, and who do the fans want? And if Pete has a monster year, he then has leverage. So if I'm him, I play it out. And if I'm the Mets, I also play it out, because unless you're getting a value, which you might get anyway based on the market, what's the advantage that the Mets would have?
Well, the advantage is a clear head moving forward this year from Pete Alonso's perspective. And listen, he seems to be operating quite freely now anyway, better than a year ago. And I think a lot of wires were crossing, and he was just, he didn't handle the contract stuff very well. Is there a clear benefit now? Well, I mean, the only thing would be if you were to do it fairly soon. And I don't mean 8-9 years. I mean in that 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, which I probably still wouldn't do. Maybe in that window, it's appealing to Pete, where you can say, okay, I don't think Pete wants to be anywhere but here. He loves being a Met. I think that's very apparent. The Met fans love him.
You don't think he just wants the most money?
You know what? I don't get that sense. And it's, at the end of the day, we all want to make and maximize our earning powers. I get that.
Why did he turn down that offer years ago then?
Well, because I think the market, number one, he was younger. The market was very different. I think we hadn't yet established this, I don't want to say a bias, but certainly working against aging right-handed first basemen
who were
very good
Boris?
Athletes. Well, I'm not saying he's looking to get raked over the coals and not get a good deal.
I'm not knocking him.
No, those are good questions. Yeah, honestly, I get you. Those are good questions. Like, if he's not looking for the most money, why would he have turned down the deal? Why would he go with Boris, who always chases every penny? I got
you. Those are just the facts.
Yeah, no question. Fair questions, good volley points, is no doubt. But I just think, I would almost love, he's not going to do this. I would love to see Pete really grab control of his own steering wheel and say, you know what? I don't like the way it went with Boris a year ago. I'm moving on from Scott Boris. And then maybe that opens up a different dialogue and a different tone with the Mets. But
I think it would.
It might. I don't think he wants to be anywhere else. I think he wants to be respected financially and respected by the Mets. And let's face it, the contract that he just signed is not a great sign of respect. And the fact that they let him out there for others to sign him so late in the offseason was not an outward sign of respect for the Mets to Pete. So
I mean, he's getting $30 million, which was the most part of the Vlad deal.
The 1 year, I get it, but still, come on. So he's played, what, 7 or 8 games as a 30-year-old first baseman who's going to, break power records for the Mets. And he had to stand in line and wait for the last second to get a contract. It doesn't seem congruent with what he's done as a Met so far. I'm not saying he's an all-time, so I'm not saying that. What I am saying is he looks comfortable. He looks good behind Soto. The Mets look good, and I believe Pete wants to stay. Get it done.
I still, though, would not negotiate in season. And also, Pete's going to turn down that $24 million, which is the player option. And even if he doesn't have a monster year. If he has a monster year, then he's definitely turning it down. But even if he doesn't, I still think he's going to turn it down and try to get, at age 31.
What, three years or something?
Well,
yeah, maybe.
Try to get a little bit more financial security. You can't keep kicking it down the road. At some point, he's going to have to get a 4 or 5 year, whatever, 3. So if the Mets came to him and said, all right, we'll give you 5 years. And remember, I was throwing around the numbers. I was saying the Mets, just give him 140 for whatever it was, 4 or 5 years for $140 million before the season and be done with it. They did not. So let's say he gets $25 million for 5 years. That's $125 on top of the $30 this year. That would have eclipsed the deal that he turned down if you factor in what he got last year as well, or at least would have been similar.
In the neighborhood.
So I think we're looking at that. Now, maybe he gets a little bit more than that. Would you give him $30 million a year for the next 5 years?
I wouldn't be in a rush to do it. I would be in a rush to maybe have the conversation. So I just want to get back to what you said. That do you think that it's more that the Mets shouldn't do it or that Pete shouldn't sign it if the Mets presented him with something interesting?
From Pete's perspective, I think it depends on what the offer is. If they came to me and I'm Pete, and they say, we'll give you 5 years, so I guess it would be this year plus 4 more, at $30 million a year, you're going to get $150 million total. I don't think he's going to beat that.
So, I don't either. Okay, No way.
Now, that to me is the Mets being gracious, because you're giving him 4 more years at $30 million a year. It's still less than Vlad, but also Vlad's way younger. Obviously, Vlad got the long term. Pete's probably thinking he's worth $200 million. I don't think he's going to get that.
No.
Okay, so if you're asking me, if I'm Pete and the Mets say we'll give you 4 more years, let's rip up this the opt out, guaranteed 4 more years on top of this year at roughly $30 million a year, gets him to 150 total for what would be 5 years. That's the deal that I think I would have offered before the season anyway, or close to it. If I'm Pete, I accept that. If I'm the Mets at this point, I would just let it. Like, what do you think the market's going to do? Do you think the market is going to say that Pete Alonso's going to be worth $40 million a year, $35 million a year? And if so, for how long? And if he really does want to be back, then why am I, the Mets, in a hurry to get the deal done now when I could just let this play out and let the market dictate it and then say, okay, here's what the market says. They say you're worth 180, we'll give you 200. The market says you're worth 140, we'll give you 160 or 150. You know what I mean?
I do. It's bad timing for Pete. I mean, really, timing is everything, and I think some of these contracts that are out there are just ridiculous. I think including Vlad Guerrero, I think Pete's been penalized for a couple of things here that we've discussed a million different ways, but I think that when I look at the Mets and who's in the system and, who could play first base for them down the road. And from Pete's perspective, who would really want him and value him? I mean, I'm not saying there wouldn't be teams that want him. I'm saying that would value him at some ridiculous rate that we all know he's not going to get. So, I mean, how long are we going to keep dating here? Like, how many dates? This is my point. How many dates do the Mets and Pete Alonso need to have before they realize That's a pretty good marriage.
Right, but also, let's not forget that we're looking at it right now through a 9-game sample where he's at his apex.
Understood. Which is why you don't do it now. Well, maybe you figure it out in 3, 4, 5 weeks, start the convo.
If he goes the other way over the course of the next month and a half, now you know what the ceiling, what the floor is anyway for Pete. He's still going to hit home runs. But if he looks like he did the last 2 years, are we saying lock him up for 5 years? See, I would be comfortable. That's why I said from Pete's perspective, I would do that. And if I'm the Mets, I just let it play out because what's the worst that could happen? Pete has a monster year and you let the market dictate the price. And if he really does want to be back and he says he does, then they'll figure it out, even if they have to pay a little bit more than market value. That's what they've done to keep their guy.
Here's the other thing I think that the Mets do need to incorporate, Sal. There's going to be a strike. There is going to be a prolonged labor strike.
You think this Vlad deal hurt that? Because I was reading somewhere that it's the Vlad deal would be something that would push a labor dispute.
Yeah, I saw that too. Okay. I'm not piped in. I did see the same stuff. Right. I don't know enough to really say I agree or
so
I don't.
Why are you saying strongly?
Well, because think about this. If you expect to have a long layoff in 2027, which I do, and I've said that for a while here on the show.
Right.
I said that going back a couple of months. Like, I think the baseball that we get to watch every night now, I think the baseball that we get to watch every night next year, I think, soak it in is what I'm saying. It's going away for a while. So if you think that it's going to go away, and I truly do, I would put money on a long layoff here in 2027, then why not just get it done and let, an in-his-prime Alonso and an in-his-prime Lindor and in-his-prime Soto just go to work unfiltered, no heaviness in the head, no contract disputes. Hey, guys, you got this year, you got next year. 2027 will be compromised. The Mets won't pay it if there's a strike anyway. Like, you know, if nothing's going on, you're not getting paid. So I don't think that it would be a financial handcuff, and I think that I don't see any other great options for the Mets at first base. I really don't.
But let me ask you it this way. Do you think, because we've had this conversation throughout the course of the horrible negotiations in the offseason with Pete, do you think the Mets were the ones that were the problem here?
No, I don't think that the Mets were the problem.
Me neither, because they've even said, like, these negotiations were harder than so. Like, Cohen came out and said that, which makes me think they were looking to get something done. They were also saying, we want him back. They were just letting the market dictate things. So I don't know the exact offers. I'm assuming we do know the one that he turned down years ago. We do know that it's different. Okay, fine. I don't know what the Mets presented this go around. What were the best offers? But Pete didn't have any other options. So what are the Mets going to do? Just say, hey, you're a nice guy. You're going to break the home run record. Let's just give you $200 million when you're not worth. Like, it would be stupid business to do that. I like what you're saying. Just get it done because he wants to be back. The fans want him back. He's a good fit for the team. He's going to be a productive player. But at what cost? And I think that we already had this conversation in the offseason.
We have. That's why this is I've said many times, I think this is one of the most, if not the, I don't want to be too hyperbolic here, but when you incorporate all the stories the last 20, 25, 30 years, I think that this probably equated to, and maybe will equate again, to the trickiest negotiation for any New York star that I can remember. Like, you think about this. Obviously, Judge was getting paid. Obviously, Patrick Ewing was getting paid. Don Mattingly was getting paid. All the great Rangers, Shesterkin, they got that deal. Boy, the Rangers, wow. They got that deal done. But Alonso,
he on that level? That's
no, right. He's not a perfect player, so he's certainly a tick below that. I get that. But all of the negotiations and all of the money that we have in this city, right, that's the guy who just can't carve out a lengthier contract. It's odd. I don't know why.
All right, let me ask you this.
Think about this, Sal. He's he's low maintenance. Fans love him. He's a consistent run producer, and he's not over the hill.
Right.
Like, those are things
But I don't think it's the Mets that aren't paying him. As a matter of fact,
did they offer him 3 years?
Again, they offered him the long term deal years ago.
Years ago, though.
And then I don't know what all the offers were this year. All I know is, at the end of it, the Mets 2 years, $54 million with the opt-out after year one, which paid him the highest paid first baseman in the sport, that was clearly the best offer.
It was, because I think it's safe face based on the AAV. If the Mets offered him a 4-year deal and he turned it down, I'm on Team Mets.
Okay.
Even if it was a 3-year deal, Team Mets.
But what is the market saying? We know what the market says, and then the question is, well, now we know that Vlad kind of reset the market, at least for first baseman, although he's 26 years old. Alonso is 30 years old. What does Vlad's actual signing mean? And we also know that he got $500 million, which he's not really worth that, but he's worth it to the Blue Jays. Does that impact Pete's market at all? Do you think teams now next year, assuming Pete hits free agency, assuming he has a monster year, are they going to look at him differently and say, you know what, we'll give this guy $200 million?
No, I don't think teams will. I think the Mets could. I think a singular team could. I think the Mets could. You know, listen, I don't know how much of the Vlad being unsigned and being a possibility, being a threat, maybe dissuading Pete from getting too aggressive, whatever. Like, that's gone. So that is one variable that they can only they can't chase that. They can't dangle that in front of Boris. Hey, listen, you know, we want Pete, but if it doesn't work out, we go kick the tires on Vlad as well. Nobody's taking that Toronto money yet. Maybe he'll take the Mets money. So I think that it does change certainly the pool of options, and I think the fact that Pete looks so comfortable early this year, it should, and I'm not saying tonight or tomorrow. I get it. It's a quick start. I understand you want to see a little bit more. But he's done enough here so far in his first 6 or 7 years. It wouldn't be an egregious mistake. Put it that way. There are contracts that are bad. I don't think there's anything the Mets could do with Pete because they will not be reckless or cavalier. That would be a bad contract.
Yeah, and just to bring it back to the beginning point, I don't think there's any need for either side to start negotiating now based off of Vlad's contract. Where if I'm Pete, I'm letting it play out, and I'm going to let the market again dictate where I'm at. And maybe now the other thing is, you know, Vlad's off the table for the Mets, but Pete's off the table for the Blue Jays.
Well,
they got their guy now. Then I can spend $200 million on Pete Alonso. So will there be another team out there in free agency that's going to be different from where we were a year ago, where it seemed like all along the Mets and Pete were the perfect fit? Nobody else, for whatever reason, wanted them. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be one other team out there that's going to be willing to pay and get his market up to where then he could decide potentially between coming back to the Mets or going elsewhere? I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. But if I'm him, I still let it play out, especially if the Mets aren't willing to give me at least $150 million for the next 4 years.
The way you lay it out, I get it. Practically, it makes sense. But if you're Pete, you want to go through this again?
I don't know.
You want to go through the charade again? He's going to blast by Strawberry by the All-Star break. All right, he's going to be the all-time Mets home run leader. He's a flawed player. We know that. But he fits, and it looks like he fits even better with Soto.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying I'm just going to say, oh, wow, oh, my God, let me give you 7 or 8 years. No, things haven't changed that radically. I'm not giving you seven. I'm not giving you six. I'm not giving you five. But in terms of having a legitimate, meaningful conversation about four to make you a lifelong Met, I would do that.
Yeah, and also I think Pete is more valuable now. Even if it's 9 games to me, he did something that I didn't think he could do. And that show that he was his old self again, that he wasn't going to be mentally torn or weakened by what happened the last 2 seasons, by what happened in the offseason. He looks more comfortable and confident, even in the field. Forget about just the numbers.
Yeah, he's made some good plays already.
It's not about the number. He just looks like he's a player that's on a mission. On a mission for what? I don't know. And if I were willing to give him 140 before the season starts, I'd certainly be willing to give him 150 now. I just don't know if you're the Mets, if you would want to go way beyond that. We'll work into the Yankees for the conversation as well, because the Vlad signing does impact them, even indirectly, where it's not just Vlad to the Yankees or it's not Vlad to the Red Sox, but also what it means for Kyle Tucker and potentially him re-signing with the Cubs or him hitting the free agent market as now being the prize free agent.
Getting healthy on a budget can be tough, but that's where Nourish comes in. Nourish connects you with a registered dietitian for expert nutrition advice without the high cost. The best part? 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket since Nourish works with hundreds of insurance plans like Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, and United. Meet with your dietitian online from home or message them through the Nourish app for extra support. Staying healthy has never been this affordable. Match with your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Work in the Yankees to the conversation as well, BT, with Kyle Tucker. In my mind, for some reason, I still want to call him Kyle Lowry. I don't know why that's the case. But Kyle Tucker, anyway, set to be a free agent. Who knows what the Cubs are going to do? Get the feeling the Yankees are going to pursue him hard if he is, in fact, a free agent. But as for the actual baseball, you know, Mets swept the Blue Jays. Yanks won 2 out of 3. Dude, did you see the MLB team ERA leaders in Major League Baseball? Well, and obviously, MLB team ERA leaders.
Is it the Mets?
Yeah.
I know the Yankees are up there number one in offense. Are the Mets number one
not
in pitching?
Not just the bullpen. They have the number one. Now, again, it's 9 games, but the Mets are number one with a 1.91 ERA. Dodgers are 2.48. That is for the team ERA. And again, I ask, how is this even possible?
I don't know what they're doing in that lab.
But it's working, BT. Now,
I know.
Now, again, it's a very small sample size. We understand that. But still,
yeah,
the fact that after even a 9-game sample size, the Mets would be number one in pitching staff ERA in all of Major League Baseball with arguably their best guy down in Sean Manaea.
Stunning.
They did it last year, and now they're doing it again.
Yeah, well, if this keeps happening, then stunning's going to have to be replaced with, okay, this is who they are. And we probably will get there at some point. I don't know what they do. Somebody's got to write a story. Like, I read a great story this morning, not to divert to the Jets, but you'll see the point, on really how Cimini wrote it. There was also something in the Post, Cimini for ESPN.com, New York Post as well. I think it may have been Costello, I think. But about how Aaron is really looking to change the culture. And at least it lifts up the curtain, gives you a sense of what he's doing to change things. And we'll see if it comes to fruition. I would love to see a real detailed, you know, chronicalization, if you will, of what the Mets pitching lab is all about. Like, what are they doing in there with Hefner?
Well, I don't know if I want those secrets out there, right? If you're the Mets.
That's true. If you look at it that way, I guess.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. But I just find it fascinating where, now again, the numbers, geez. They're not going to finish number one, I don't think, but I didn't think they'd have a very good staff a year ago. So there's just something, sometimes there's a secret sauce that's special. It's either a philosophy and then the ability to implement some numbers behind it. I don't know what they're doing, but I want to know.
Okay.
I'll tell you this, even if I found out of respect, I wouldn't share it. Just for my own curiosity, I really want to know what they're doing.
Well, I like that you brought the Jets example up because I do think there's an element to that with the Mets where they're identifying pitchers that they believe fit what they're looking to do. Maybe they identify something and say, okay, this guy's working on this pitch or whatever. We can fix that or make this better. Mm. Whatever it is that I'm not smart enough to understand or figure out, clearly Stearns and his front office and Hefner as well, they're identifying certain things in certain pitchers that they are bringing in and maximizing those guys. Not dissimilar to what Brian Cashman has done for many years with the Yankees bullpen.
Yeah.
The Mets have done that with their bullpen as well this year, which to me is the biggest part of them leading Major League Baseball with their ERA. They got guys in the bullpen that are going multiple innings that just aren't allowing anything.
I think really Minter's the only one who's been touched up a little bit. Everybody else is pretty good.
Like, so you build
perfect
it,
almost.
So you build it based off of, okay, well, we expect to get 5 solid innings from Holmes, Senga, you know, Montas, even though he's not there, whatever. We believe Griffin Canning can be good for 4 1/3 innings, like, and then just go to our bullpen.
Yep.
They're approaching it in such a different way you know, analytically driven, sure, but breaking down a nine-inning game where maybe just, you know, old school us, or we just look at it and say, okay, there's nine innings. I want the pitcher to give me seven innings and figure it out, hand it over to the best bullpen guys. They're looking at it. We need so many innings per year.
Yeah.
We just get us through the game to get us to the bullpen guys who are healthy right now and fresh. And it's working again. They did it a year ago, and they're doing it again.
They truly seem to rely on a mathematical equation.
Yes.
To your point about the numbers there, right? And how you need to, you know, just plug in X amount of innings to have something in position to work. That now, anybody could do basic math and say, well, we have X amount of games, and
right.
We get this from this guy, and you plug it in. But I think it's deeper than that. I mean, it's obviously deeper than that. I would like to know how much of their, and I've seen this with some other organizations where you talk about, or you hear stories about, hey, the guy threw the changeup with, you know, a circle change this way, but then he went to another organization and they just moved his, you know, his pinky, which is hanging off the ball, an inch. Like, there's definitely that stuff going on. Or, hey, this pitcher, we like his stuff, but we detected he was far too reliant on a certain pitch. We think there's other value with other pitches that he kind of ignores in terms of percentage use, like usage rate, and we're going to kind of flip. If he's a, I'm just throwing this out, if he's a 42% slider guy and a 13% change, but they don't think he should throw a slider 42%, and they think that 13 should go up.
Right.
There's a way to incorporate a deeper mathematical equation. That happens all the time.
Well, yeah, or let's say I was thinking about it with Griffin Canning specifically. And again, I don't know this. I'm not taking the time to research it. I really don't care. But you look at a guy who had an ERA that was over 5. It's like, oh, God, this guy, come on. What are you going to find from him? But maybe a lot of that damage was done in the third time around. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. So then they look at him and say, well, he could be good if we maximize certain pitches for a shorter amount of time as opposed to asking more of him, maybe the way the Angels were, or figuring out how to maximize what you have in David Peterson and Tylor Megill. Whatever it is that they're doing, and I'm sure it's multiple things. You're right. I love the word that you use, mathematical equation. You feel like that. The way they're approaching these games is like a mathematical equation.
Mm-hmm.
And it freaking works.
Again, small sample, but last year was an entire sample. All right, let me ask you this, and we'll get to the calls here. So, who do you look forward to watching pitch the most right now for the Mets?
You're talking about just starters?
Starters. Like, there's always an elevated, like, all right, so-and-so's getting the ball tonight. Like, I can't wait to watch him.
Me personally.
Nobody yet, fully, right?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I guess it would be Senga for most, but for me personally, Griffin Canning to keep the story going. But yeah, you're right. There is no exciting.
That's what makes it even more interesting. They're all contributing.
Holmes, whatever. Yeah. They're intriguing as opposed to exciting,
mm-hmm.
and they're all doing the same thing, giving you decent starts. What I would deem old school, awful starts, 4 innings, 5 innings. But in today's day and age, giving you decent starts, keeping you in the game, handing it over to the bullpen, and then the bullpen's doing the job. So I guess the final question to that would be, is this sustainable? I'm not doubting Stearns, Hefner, the lab, their philosophy, their mathematic equations. I'm not doubting that. I think that is sustainable. It has been proven that it was for a full year. Is it sustainable to continue to rely on the bullpen as heavily? Because this was not the... a year ago, they did rely on the bullpen to a certain extent. They came out of nowhere, but is this even sustainable, what the Mets are doing here?
You know, for a long time, I would have said no to that question, but I'm starting to think that it is. I mean, Senga missed basically the entire season last year.
Yeah.
After a really good, you know, first-year debut with the New York Mets. So, I don't know. I think that part of it is almost misremembering how we perceive the game of baseball.
Right.
It's so ingrained in my head that if you start, you know, using these arms so often, so early, there will be burnout by August or so. But last year's team doesn't validate that statement. And one more thing, and this is the exciting part about the potential about the Mets pitchers moving forward. The Mets organizationally are doing this with guys that are cast-offs from other, okay? What's going to happen? What are they going to look like with the kids that they draft? And they're like, okay, we love his makeup. We love his stuff. And now, whatever we're doing in that lab, now we do with him with better stuff. Well, that's where it could get lights out.
You take the organization to a whole nother level with that, and that would be the expectation. And it really is a beautiful thing when you're seeing a plan come together and executed like this. Even Soto, where, okay, they made a huge investment, but you're seeing it even where he's in a slump, so to speak.
Yeah.
He's still getting on base. Like, his floor is so much better than everybody else's floor because at his worst, he's still going to get on base, which I think is a great thing to invest in. And if you can get the pitching to a level where they've gotten it to without investing anything in it,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, I mean, that's where you're really starting to take off to a whole nother. Think about in contrast what teams, you want to use the Yankees or whoever, when they spend so much. And we talk about Alcantara and what it's going to take to get him.
Nope.
And yeah, well, Alcantara, what it's going to take to get him. You're investing a lot in starting pitching that was developed elsewhere at the highest of levels. But if you could go find guys, I mean, we know what the Dodgers did, right? Maybe the Dodgers are a better example than the Yankees. Everybody looks at them as they can't be beat. Look at their loaded rotation. Sasaki, Yamamoto, Glasnow, all these guys. Ohtani eventually.
Snell got hurt.
Yeah, Snell, okay, still. Snell, all these guys, though.
Yeah.
They're investing big in that, and yet the Mets still have a better ERA than them to begin the season.
I mean, it's a good story because it's now a continuation of what was a great story a year ago, which obviously gives it more believability. That bothered me that they lost that game yesterday. Not to the point I'm going to go nuts, obviously. They've got a nice run differential. Number one run differential in baseball. The entire American League East is playing. It's pretty crowded already. Baltimore, I think, is in last place at 4-6. Nobody's going to run away with this thing, as many of us surmised here. The Yankees are an interesting watch here because they're lower third. I mean, some of the guys, they are banging the snot out of the ball in the bottom of the order. They have a nice average, but I got to tell you one thing that I noticed more and more and more, and I like him as a player, all right, but I watched basically all the games over the weekend, and the more Jazz Chisholm's up there in a very important spot,
oof,
I don't feel comfortable. I know the numbers are going to be there. He's going to bang 25 or 30, going to steal a ton of bases.
He's not a good hitter, though.
He's not, like, he is undisciplined and very easy to get out if you just go low and away. He cannot hit that pitch.
He should not be hitting fourth. Eventually, they'll change that. You can't have him up there in that spot. You want these guys. Now, I was feeling the same thing about Jesse Winker over the weekend, saying, man, I'd rather have Vientos up in this spot. Mendy stuck with the lefty. Winker, he comes through with a big hit. So it doesn't mean that we're always going to be right here or that they're always going to be wrong or vice versa. But I'm with you. Jazz is just not a good hitter. He's going to hit power numbers.
Yeah.
He's going to have his moments. He's not a consistent. I hate the ups and downs. And for me, I'm glad you said that the Yankees are, would you say, interesting watch?
They're an interesting watch. I mean, it's a little bit of everything every night.
Right, but for me, it was supposed to be that they were going to be a much better watch night in, night out than last year. And I'm seeing a lot of similarities from this team to last year, meaning that it's a lot with the home run. There's a lot of strikeouts. There's a lot of failures in big spots.
Mm.
Yeah, it's nice to see Grisham get the job done. Volpe defensively. Peraza. I mean,
Cabrera. I get it.
Now, is that sustainable?
You take it.
All right, but you know what I'm saying. In general, it has been the all or nothing. Now, I'm not trying to pick on the Yankees here, but they have played two of the worst teams in the game. The Mets played the awful team. The Marlins stink, too. Baseball, in general, needs to do a better job because these teams just stink. The Pirates, dude.
They're bad.
They are an awful, awful watch. I'm not taking away from the Yankees, and it was nice to see Grisham hammer the ball against lefties, Yankees, lefty on lefty, hitting big home runs, going the other way, whatever. Big base hits, key base hits. So it's not a big deal that they lost the game, but I still feel like the volatility of the Yankees, specifically their lineup, is there where we thought that was going to be, the curves would be leveled a little bit this year and they'd be a more sound, fundamentally sound watch. I don't know if I'm not seeing that yet.
They're starting to run more, which is nice because now it's not all about the home runs, even though they have the second or the most home runs in baseball. I agree and I disagree. Like, I know that they've had some games and some sequences where it's been confounded. Remember 30 strikeouts over two games there. Last week we touched on that. That's just unacceptable. But they do have a 285 average, and it doesn't seem like they have a 285 average. The more I watch this team, obviously Judge is Judge, and I think many of the components have shown that they are either ready to have better years than they did a year ago, you know, like a Volpe, like some of the other younger players here. I think the key to this team is, and he's really yet to get going, is going to be Bellinger. I think if Bellinger is if he's a 280-ish kind of a hitter, 285 would pop, and obviously, you know, some real, you know, early order presence, I think it changes who the Yankees are. If he's a 245, 250, 250 guy, it also changes who they are. So Goldschmidt looks like he's got some juice left in those hands, and that looks to be a decent signing for a year. But, yeah, I mean, they played some bad teams. They've done some great things. They've done some confounding things. I think they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to be great. Yeah, I said that from the start.
I guess the biggest issue to me is just too many strikeouts still. They right now are 20,
where are they at?
22nd in baseball with 89. Now, still, some of the numbers are close. The Cubs have struck out the most times with 100 strikeouts. They've also played 12 games.
Yep.
Yankees have only played 9 games so far. Pirates have 99 strikeouts through 10 games. And again, so I mean, giving an example, the Mets are fourth with 67 strikeouts through 9 games. Just maybe that's my biggest issue, because defensively, I love watching Volpe. I think he's taking a next step this year. Bellinger in the outfield looks great. We like Judge back in right field. Goldschmidt at first base.
You know, Jazz can pick it.
Yeah, there's no Glaber you have to worry about.
Dominguez has not been on skates.
Right.
I saw a couple balls over the weekend where off a lefty bat, that's going to the line. Like, he got good jumps and good reads. So, I mean, remember the first 3 days of spring training, we're like, there's no way this kid could play left field.
Right.
He's doing well. Now, he's not hitting great, but he's not getting overwhelmed defensively. I thought the Yanks would be a very good defensive team this year, and I think they are.
That's what I'm saying. I guess it's the strikeouts that maybe
for me.
Well, but that makes it look bad when you got guys on and you're not putting the ball in play.
Yeah.
Now, they score a ton of runs because of the home run, sure, but that's... That, to me, is the same thing that's been going on with this team for a long time.
Well, the thing that I don't do, and because it's you just won't enjoy baseball from a Yankee perspective. Like, for me to sit here and say, well, you know, the Pirates stink, and by the way, they do, and, you know, the Brewers stink, and, oh, yeah, by the way, they do. Like, and I said this the other day, like, I'm not just going to hit fast forward and go to October. That, to me, is not fun. That is, there's too many things that could change during the season. But there are also some early trends, and I said this last week. If they don't have more quality at-bats situationally, they will not win the World Series. It's really that simple.
Well, but maybe it comes down then to beating good teams as well, or good pitching. How come they look so different against the teams that have better pitching or are better teams than they do against the bad teams? And I'm not, by the way, when I say that the Pirates are awful or the Brewers are awful, that's not a shot at the Yankees. That's a shot at Major League Baseball. When you watch a Major League Baseball game, I want to watch a game that's played well at the highest level. And I think too many times these games are not being played well. That's not the Yankees' fault. That's Major League Baseball's fault. But the Pirates are not a real Major League team.
And they're talking about expansion.
Yeah,
you see what Manfred said the other day?
No.
I think he steps away in 2029. I might have the year off. I think it's 2029. But he's like, yeah, we haven't announced it yet, but we feel pretty good that we already have the places in secured for expansion.
They need to contract.
It's
the Marlins stink. You have too many teams that are going out there not even trying to win.
Yeah, it's
and
a couple.
Fielding teams with guys who don't belong in the big leagues.
It's an interesting state of baseball right now.
BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get some calls in here, BT, 888-808-1019. Talking about the Mets pitching before. Kevin is on Long Island. What's up, Kev?
Hey, how are you guys doing? I just have two things about the Mets pitching staff. I think that one of them is obviously David Stearns sees stuff in guys, and he built that Milwaukee Brewers rotation from nothing into something, and I think he's doing the same thing with the Mets. And I also think we don't give enough love to our training staff. We have multiple guys who come out and play 160 games a year. And Luis Severino talked about it last year towards the end of the season in that Philly series. He said that, you know, that's a guy that was injury riddled pretty much his whole career. And then he came over to the Mets and he said in himself that Joe Galea and the training staff kept him healthy and got him in a new routine. And the best ability is availability, especially for pitchers.
Yeah, but here's the counter to that. Where's Frankie Montas? Where's Sean Manaea?
I think that pitching injuries specifically are so rampant in the MLB, and especially coming into the season, I think that a big part.
Hey, we got a bad line there, Kevin. Thanks for the call. I'm not trying to knock the Mets here, but you can't just say that because Severino said they kept him healthy, which was great. It's not like the Mets have the magic potion to keep guys healthy. Senga missed all of last year, came back, was hurt again. Like, injuries happen. So the Mets can't solve that. Manaea, he was a guy that they brought in. He was healthy a year ago. He threw a ton of innings, the most in his career. He's out now to start the year. Montas, they identified as a guy they wanted to bring in. He's always hurt. He's hurt before he even gets going with the Mets.
Yeah.
I can't give him credit for that.
No, but I do think that there's a connection between a franchise that is striving to become a world-class organization and being very buttoned up medically. Now, I think I remember when Severino said that, I was like, well, it's an interesting take, where he's with the Yankees for a long time. Didn't denounce the Yankees' practices, but really just headed to illuminate what the Mets do well. Yeah, I mean, it's would Lindor play 160 games if he was still on the Guardians? Probably, because he did it there. You know, would Pete post every day if he was up in Toronto or with the Brewers? Probably. He seems to be built that way, but it's a hard thing to identify. I think you know when you don't have it more than when you do, And it seems like the Mets are a competent, if not more, medically, you know, medical staff, which is good.
I think the
you should be.
I think the better part of that is that they're not investing big in these pitchers, so when they do get hurt, it's not crippling.
Whereas
the drop off from Manaea to Tyler McGill, just to throw out a name out there, is not as significant as it would be if you spent $300 million. Let's say the Mets signed Gerrit Cole, and they had Gerrit Cole, and he drops off. Now you don't have an ace to replace him. The Mets do not have big investments in that starting rotation, and when you do lose these guys for a certain amount of time, you can overcome it because there's a next guy to step in that's capable at the major league level.
There is. I still think that there's a connection to what extent, I'm not sure. I do think it's changed, to be fair. I think that you need still at the top of that rotation, whomever it might be, you need a horse who, if you want to win a World Series, you need a guy, and that I don't think they have that guy right now. You need that guy that could go out there and put up seven with eight or nine strikeouts and no runs and a walk and a couple of hits.
I think that's
on the road.
That's the best way to further the conversations. What Stearns has done is proven in Milwaukee, and they had some aces there anyway, those type guys, Woodruff, Burns, whatever.
Yep.
Still didn't get the job done in the postseason, though. And then with the Mets now for a year plus nine games, it's eye-opening what he's been able to do. However, in the postseason, that's a different animal, and that's something that Stearns, including his Milwaukee career, he's never been able to break through.
He has not been, but he also didn't have the ability to splurge in other areas. If he did have that in Milwaukee, maybe that's a team that would have won a championship.
Joe is on Long Beach. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, buddy. What's happening?
Nothing much. I heard you guys before the break talking about, I'm probably one of the few and far between that actually, who are you excited for every 5 days to pitch?
Yeah.
I'm still on that Tyler McGill mountain because of the stuff aspect of it. I just think that it's fun to watch him come out, and he throws six different pitches. He can throw 98 miles an hour. It's still in the back of my head that this guy can actually be something. I know the results haven't necessarily been there. He's not striking out guys left and right. For some reason, just from an excitement aspect, that's why I look forward to watching him. Also, David Peterson, too, just because the guy seems like he's found out something in that pitching lab, probably, that's happened to work for him. I mean, I know yesterday he had a little bit of a short outing or whatever nausea he had going on.
Yeah.
And one other little separate note, too. On the Saturday night game, I hope they can keep, whenever I go, next Saturday night or any kind of night game I go to, I heard the fans when the pitch clock got down to 3-2-1. The whole stadium started chanting like it was a basketball countdown, and I thought that was electric. I mean, I hope we can do that also, because that might get inside the pitcher's head, because as soon as they did that, that's when Torrance hit that bloop single. So, yeah, that's all I have to say.
There you go.
Thank you.
Well, right, thank you for the call, Joe. Yeah, I'm not for that myself. You have any thoughts on that?
Nothing crazy. Like, you know, I never would have thought to really do it. I think it's a little bit much for baseball, but not enough to, you know, step on it. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's unique. I don't see other teams doing
it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell a fan what to do, certainly. It's just, I don't think it's effective. I don't think it's entertaining. As a matter of fact, I find it quite the opposite. I find it annoying watching the game. Now, if you're there, it's different because it can create a fun atmosphere, and the Mets drew great crowds opening weekend, which is great for them. Good to see, even with crappy weather against the crappy Blue Jays. But for me, it was annoying having that countdown while I'm trying to watch the game. I don't care about the pitch clock. I want to pretend the pitch clock doesn't exist. And I get that fans are there. They're into it. You know, you're looped up a little bit, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That's fine. I hope it doesn't become a thing.
I don't know if it will. It shows a level of engagement to me that I kind of like. I think it's cool. I think it's unique. And I want to get back to McGill for a second. I just looked this up because this kind of ties into the greater conversation about what the Mets pitching lab really is. And we don't know. But I'm looking back to, so in 2023, McGill, and even the year or two before that, really first couple years, he was around 55, 56, 57% throwing his fastball. Now this year he's at 42%. So that didn't just change because Tyler McGill said, I'm going to change some stuff here. That is and then the implementation, much more. I know we have to break. That's why I'm cutting it short. The slider and some other things that he wasn't using as much. You know, there's some tangible stuff right there that shows that he's doing things differently than before, you know, the Mets' new regime got here.
So them saying, hey, enough with the fastball or limit that.
And his velocity's a tick up, and the other makes him less predictable. And that's interesting.
BT and Sal on the fan. We'll continue the conversation when we come back. 888-808-1019. I got to get some Knicks as well, so we'll get to that. A lot going on here on this Monday morning. BT and Sal on the fan.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face.
That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Attention, ladies in the Leawood area. Beaumont Health and Wellness is here and offers award-winning wellness and beauty treatments like hormone therapy, weight loss, body contouring, microneedling, and injectables. Right now, get our $147 hormone replacement starter kit, including a private consultation, precision blood work, and a free B12 shot to recharge your body. Beaumont Health and Wellness, luxuriously bold, effortlessly sexy, undeniably you. Call 913-261-9855 or book now at BeaumontHealthKS.com.